This is the Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage show by Mark Helm. Nothing Mark shares with you guarantees your success in the self-storage business. This is for informational purposes only. There are no calls to action and nothing said or implied is a call for investment money into self-storage or any other asset class. You are responsible for your success in the self-storage business or any endeavor in life. Enjoy the show, and here is Mark Helm.
As I work with people getting in the self-storage business, I realize I use a lot of jargon sometimes, and I use metrics that often are not fully understood. Today, I want to talk about two return metrics that we use in our business quite a bit, and in commercial real estate: internal rate of return, cash on cash return. What they are, what the difference is, and most importantly, how you calculate them. My name's Mark Helm. I'm the author of Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage, and I'm the creator of the Quick Start Academy. The Quick Start Academy houses the training that I offer the small investor who wants to get into self-storage business or who wants to grow their self-storage business. You can go to creatingwealththroughselfstorage.com, hit the store tab and see all the courses that are offered. So we use a lot of terms in our business and in our industry and on these videos and blogs, and I realize not everybody always knows what they are or how they're calculated or what they really mean. And we'll talk about two of them. We talk about a lot of stuff, you know, cap rates, for example. Not everybody knows what a cap rate is. I've done a few episodes on what cap rates are and how at least I relate to them when I'm buying or selling self-storage. In fact, there's a link in the episode 454 that will take you right to the episode on what cap rates are. But today I want to talk about two return metrics that we use in our industry all the time. One is cash on cash return. The other is internal rate of return. What the difference is and how they're calculated. And rather than use the Storage World Analyzer, I thought I'd do it in Excel today. Now, the Storage World Analyzer will automatically calculate for you what the internal rate of return is and what the cash on cash return is, but I'm going to use Excel so you can actually see how we arrive at those numbers. So I'm going to use parts of a proforma that I have recently done, and this was for a conversion and a boat and RV development on the remaining land that the building was sitting on. And I'm going to show you how we calculate these two numbers, what the difference between them is, and what each one of them really means for the deal, for the partners, or for the investors. And we're going to start with the easier one. We're going to start with the cash on cash return. But let's look at the summary page in Excel for this particular project. So you can see here that this was a project where it was $6.5 million. Don't worry about the numbers. You could have 10 less or 10 more. It really doesn't matter. But it was $6.5 million for the existing building and land. It looked like we were going to spend a total of about an additional $7.2 million worth of development between the conversion and developing the land for boat and RV. So it was about a $13.7 million project. So if you look at the debt page, you see the 6.5 acquisition, the 7.2. So it's 13.7 project. We put in an additional $450,000 worth of interest reserve that would go in the loan, or most of it would go in the loan, and that was from year one negative cash flow. So it, all in all, $14.157 million project, and we were looking to raise, it was put a, hopefully a 75% loan to value loan on it. And in the equity, we were putting 25% down plus the negative cash flow in year two, which you will see in a minute. So year one negative cash flow was in the interest reserve. Year two negative cash flow was in the equity raise. Our PI, principal and interest payment, would be $920,000, basically $921,000 a year. And during the interest only period, it would be close to $770,000. Now, it really doesn't matter whether it's your money or whether it's investor money. These metrics would mean the same. So in the, quote, capital stack of this particular deal, the capital stack was $10,617,777 worth of debt and $4,062,919 of equity. That was the capital stack. How you like that fancy term? You see, in years one and two, there's a negative cash flow that was projected that is covered. Then in years three through five, the cash flow is positive. In year six, in this financial model, we're going to have what's called a liquidity event. In other words, we're going to refinance and pull cash out of the deal. And then we'll put a new loan on it for the remaining year 6 through 10. Now, at the bottom of each year is a line on this spreadsheet that's percent of ROC, which means return on cash. Or in other words, this is a cash on cash return. Now, the calculation is very simple. On the debt service page, we were injecting $4,062,919 in cash. The math for this, let's take year three for example, you can see that there is $66,179 projected net cash flow either to the deal or to me or to you or to the investors. How you calculate that is you divide that 66,179 by the 4,062,919. And in other words, in year three, that 4.63 earned 1.63% yield for that year. By year five, that 4,063,000 earned 13.28% in year five. Now you'll notice in the remaining, after the refinance, there is no cash on cash or return calculated. That's because there's no cash in the deal. All the cash that was originally put in the deal has been pulled out of the deal, and we got our initial investment back plus some extra money. Now this is a simple but very important metric. So as an investor, a small investor, if you're going to take the risk and burn the calories to do a project like this, what is your minimum cash on cash return? So for us, we tend to look at 12 to 15% minimum cash on cash return once we're stabilized or once we've done the value add play. But that's just ours. What are yours? So if you're looking at this deal, you see that the first year we're stabilized, it's right at or very close to a 12% cash on cash return. You could have a lot of other metrics too. So for example, it looks like in this deal, it's about a $14.1, $14.2 million deal by the time you did the acquisition, the development, the negative cash flow. And when you're stabilized at a 6.5 cap, this project's worth approximately $21 million. So I've created a lot of equity by taking this risk, if my calculations are anywhere near correct. Would you do that deal? That's an important metric for us, but today we're talking about cash on cash return, and we're talking about internal rate of return. But just know there's other metrics you can use. So creating that much equity and creating a 12% cash on cash return, for many people, that's great use of their $4 million. And for other people, it's not enough. So it just depends on your business strategy and what the return on the capital you want to see that you put in a self-storage deal. So let's now talk about internal rate of return, and there's a lot of misunderstanding about this metric. Internal rate of return is a metric that was initially designed so that investors could look at different type of deals, different type of investment opportunities, and determine which one would be the best use of their money. Literally, you could compare an oil rig investment to a self-storage project, or you could look at doing a land development deal and compare that to an apartment deal. And by calculating the internal rate of return, you can see which one is projected to give you a higher rate of return on your capital while your money's in the deal. You could have different time lengths that your money's in the deal, different product types. It really doesn't matter. With the internal rate of return does is calculate what the average return for your capital is in the life of this investment. So if you're just using your own money, you should know this. It's good metric to know. But if you're raising money and you have partners that are putting money in the deal and you have investors in particular that are putting money in the deal, this is a critical metric. You've got to know it. You've got to know what it means. And you've got to be able to understand some of the nuances of it that we'll talk about towards the end. Now, again, in the Storage World Analyzer, it's already calculated for you. It's usually at the bottom of the summary page. It will calculate what the internal rate of return is based on the cash flows and the life of that deal. However, so that you understand what goes into making up the internal rate of return calculation, we're going to look at this same deal again, and we're going to look at it differently. We're going to calculate what the internal rate of return is for this particular project. And the way I relate to it is, I relate to it like a table. And in the table, there's two columns. One is time periods, and you could have monthly, but we're going to use yearly time periods. And in the second column are cash flows. And cash flows could be money going into the deal and money coming out of the deal. And you always start an internal rate of return calculation with time period zero. And time period zero in this case would be when we closed on the deal. So let's create this table together. In this particular deal, time period zero would be when we close. And when we close, we remember we're injecting $4,062,919 into the deal in this financial model. And that goes in because it's cash going in the deal. It goes in as a negative number. Now, you'll see that there is negative cash flow in years one and two on the 10-year cash flow statement. But remember, we had that taken care of. The negative cash flow in year one was covered by the reserve fund that we're putting in the loan. The negative cash flow in year two was raised in the equity that went into the deal in time period zero. So what's going to happen is, on years one and two, there'll be no cash going into the deal and no cash going out of the deal. So here's what our table looks like at the end of year two. Now, if you look at years three and four, we're showing positive cash flow. We take it straight off the 10-year cash flow statement. Year three, you see here, $66,179 projected. Year four, $478,544. So this is what our table looks like by the end of year four. Now, year five for this deal is going to be a big year because we're going to refinance the deal. In this particular financial model, we're going to refinance it with a new 65% loan-to-value non-recourse loan. So in these financial modeling tools that we use, whether it's Excel or the Storage World Analyzer, to make it simple, we're going to assume we're going to refinance it month 12, year 5. Now, here is a table of what the refinance loan looks like. You can see from the cash flow statement that we're projecting a value or an appraised value at a 6.5 cap on the net operating income that we're projecting for year five, the value for the asset will be $22,655,381. The new loan at a 65% loan to value will be $14,725,998. The balance left on the current loan that was put on at time period zero is $10,097,239. So that shows net cash proceeds of $5,638,483. Another reason we like the non-recourse CMBS loans, we don't get much pushback on having a cash out amount of that much. And remember, refinance proceeds are a non-taxable event. So from the 10-year cash flow statement, we can see we're projecting a net cash flow from operations in year five of $539,648. Plus, you add the refinance proceeds of $5,638,483 for a total of basically almost $6.2 million coming out of the deal in cash flow, year five. Here's what our table looks like so far. Now the new loan is in place. We have higher debt service. So the net cash flow, it's still positive, but it's less than it was in, you know, years four and five. And if we take our table, let's year six through years nine, just taking it straight off the net cash flow, straight off the cash flow statement, here's what our table looks like, time period zero through year nine. Now, every internal rate of return has a starting period, time period zero, and it has an ending period. And at the ending period, there's always a sale or a disposition, almost always, on an internal rate of return calculation. Even if we're thinking we're not going to sell it, we still have to show what the net proceeds would be from a sale to get an internal rate of return. Remember, what the internal rate of return is really telling us is what is that $4,063,000, what's it going to earn on average during the life of that investment? And to calculate that, the life of the investment ends when you have a sale. So there's always a sale. So in this financial model, we're going to have a sale month 12, year 10. So the number that goes into year 10 is the net cash flow from operations, which you can see from the 10-year cash flow, is $613,913. And then we calculated the net proceeds after we took out a cost of sale and paid the new loan off was $17,826,488 net sales proceeds from the sale or disposition of this asset. So now we have a completed IRR table. These are the projected cash flows from time period zero through time period 10 in this financial model of this asset. Now keep in mind, we're calculating a pre-tax internal rate of return. If you're the only person in the deal and it's your money going in, you could also calculate a after-tax internal rate of return. But usually with partners and or investors, what we set these up as LLCs, and every partner or investor has different tax rates, different, you know, some are passive investors, some are active investors. So usually what we do by having it in an LLC, we pass straight through the income or losses in the form of a K-1 to the investors, and then the investors take that K-1, or their CPAs do, and apply whatever tax implications that they may have towards that income or loss for the year. But for what we're doing is we're doing a pre-tax internal rate of return calculation. So how do you determine? Well, once you have your cash flows, here's how you do it. We're going to use Excel. And what you do is you go in Excel and you go to the formula tab. Then you go to financial. Then you slide down the drop down menu to internal rate of return and click it. Then you highlight the cash flows from time period 0 to time period 10. And then you go to the right side of the screen and click done. And voila, you have your internal rate of return calculation. So what this calculation is an internal rate of return of 27%. So in other words, that $4,062,919 average yearly over the life of this investment, if these were the cash flows, it would average 27% a year. Would you do that? 12% kind of cash on cash return when you're stabilized, and over a 10-year period that your investment will have averaged 27% a year? I probably would. But more importantly, what the IRR allows you to do is to compare different investments with different time lengths, different amounts going in, different cash flows coming out, and it will allow you to compare deals with each other. It will also allow you to some degree to determine what the risk might be. So for example, if the majority of your money, your cash flow coming out of the deal, is coming out in the latter part of the time periods, it's a more risky deal. If it's coming out fairly equal, in this case, we had a liquidity event halfway through the deal, and we had, other than years 1 and 2, we had cash flow from operations coming out, it reduces the risk of the deal. So for a development project, 27% is a nice IRR, but more importantly, we've got cash flows in this particular financial model coming out throughout the life of this investment. So it tends to reduce the risk to the investor. A savvy investor will also be looking at that aspect of it too, not just what is the internal rate of return. Now, when I got going, I was using other people's money. So basically, when I first started, we were offering 10 or 12% preferred returns, different time then than it is now. And I needed to be able to, by year 5, have created enough value to refinance and give my investors their money back. So life got real simple for me. I knew what I needed to be able to get in terms of a cash on cash return, and I knew how much equity I needed to create in years 1 through 5. My kind of benchmark numbers were a minimum of 12% once we're stabilized, and a minimum of a 20% internal rate of return on a 10-year cash flow. You can also calculate them on 5 years. Today, 13 to 17% might be kind of a normal 5-year, although I've seen many that are higher. I've had some that are much higher, over 20 in 5 years. But mostly what I'm seeing is like 15 to 17% internal rate of return projected in a 5-year deal and 20 plus on a 10-year. I also run them because every now and then, based on how the cash flows are going, a 5-year internal rate of return could be higher than a 10-year internal rate of return. Another important thing, you would want to know that, wouldn't you? When you want to know that you get a maximum return by selling it in year 5, sometimes that happens. That's why this is an important metric to, one, understand, and two, calculate. So I hope this helps as you get in this fantastic business of self-storage, and as you hear people talking about different return metrics, now you know. My name's Mark Helm. I'm the author of Creating Wealth Through Self-Storage, and I'm the creator of the Storage World Analyzer, the financial analysis modeling tool that automatically calculates your cash-on-cash returns on the 10-year cash flow and your internal rate of return on the summary page. Thanks a lot, and I will talk to you next week.